What the Bleep Do We Know?
It's a 2004 film that combines documentary-style interviews, computer-animated graphics, and a narrative that really pushes you into a spiritual connection between quantum physics and consciousness. It's amazing. The plot follows the fictional story of a photographer as she encounters emotional and existential obstacles in her life and begins to consider the idea that individual and group consciousness can influence the material world. And how well do we know that? And then there was a new DVD version back in 2006. In a moment, we will talk about What the Bleep Do We Know on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. A couple guests for you. First of all, let me introduce William Arntz. Started his professional career as a research laser physicist working on Star Wars high lasers and energy. He then moved into software, writing AutoSys, which is an automated job control system currently in use by most Fortune 500 companies. He sold that company, simply retired, but then decided to make a film, creating, producing, and writing What the Bleep Do We Know? An exploration of spirituality, quantum physics, neurology, and possibilities that are out there. The film and companion book, with editions in over 20 languages now, were international bestsellers. Let's say hi, first of all, to William. William, welcome to the program. I'm looking forward to this.
Well, thank you, George. I am, too.
And you financed all this yourself? You did it all, didn't you?
Yeah, I did. Well, you know, I made the money on the software, and I thought I'd do something with it.
Super. And Deirdre Haidt is with us. Began to see energy at a very young age, but never quite understood why until her mother was diagnosed with advanced breast cancer when she was 16. Together, the two of them began developing a method of energy work that coined Radiance Healing, which led her mother to live 13 years longer than expected. Since then, Deirdre has worked and expanded into the development of a system of spiritual awakening, and here she is on Coast to Coast. Hey, Deirdre, welcome to the show.
Hi there. It's so great to be here with you. Thank you.
And are you two are married together?
Yes.
Okay, great.
Recently.
Really? Congratulations.
Thank you.
William, you did something again right in your life, right?
Yeah, well, I waited. We didn't get married until I was at the ripe age of 62.
I love it. I love it. Let's start with you, William. After you went through your career, your corporate career, you sold your company, what was it? What was the inspiration to do the amazing film, What the Bleep Do We Know?
Well, it was a couple of things. One, I'd always had a hankering to make films because that's what I did with my friends growing up in high school and college. That's just what we did for fun. So I always wanted to do that, but then I left it and went into science and computers and whatnot. So that was one factor. Another factor was I had been in spiritual practice for 20 years at that point. And so I was always interested about, you know, science and spirituality. And, you know, back then, a lot of people said, well, you know, they're two different things. But there was this movement that Fritjof Capra really started with that book, The Tao of Physics, saying, look, everyone, there's a lot of similarities. Let's stop fist fighting and looking how they can come together. So that was part of it. And the third thing was, because of my 20 years of spiritual practice, I was tired of being treated like a second-class citizen.
Yeah.
You know, back then, if you told someone you meditated, they would look at you like, oh, are you ready to Jim Jones? You're going to drink Kool-Aid?
Mm-hmm, that's
you
right.
Know, that's kind of what it was like. And so there was this real, now, it's different now. You drive down the street and every strip mall has a yoga studio. But 30 years ago, it wasn't like that. So part of it, I had a chip on my shoulder and I thought, you know, from all the years of practice, this is not some flaky, you know, woo-woo type thing. The people who are doing it, I mean, you read a lot, you study, you examine yourself, you question your concepts. I mean, you really dig in. And I wanted to portray that side of it to society at large.
Did you have a easy time or difficult time finding people for the concepts of the film?
No, the people that we interviewed, they were all pretty much excited to do it. They didn't think it was going to turn out the way it did, of course. They thought, we called them up and said, we want to interview you for a movie. And they thought, okay, well, gee, you know, nice little movie. And then we showed up with a real film crew. And that was their first surprise. And then after that, we got all the footage and then went off, and it took a year and a half or 2 years to do the animation and shoot the real movie and et cetera, et cetera. And then suddenly they're getting calls from people saying, hey, I saw you on the big screen. And they were like, what? And they said, yeah, that you're in this film. And they thought, oh, I don't know what happened to that. I thought it wasn't getting made.
Did you expect it to take off the way it did?
I did, because part of a reason also that I did it was I had this feeling that there was millions of people out there who were really looking for this sort of information. And so it was one of these psychic pulls that I felt this pull that there were a lot of people, because when I would tell people about it who weren't necessarily, quote-unquote, on the path, they were always fascinated by it. So I thought, you know, if we can just get it started and get people talking, this is going to do pretty well, because the information itself and, you know, the way that we stitched it together seemed to be so compelling. So when it started to roll, I was like, huh, it's about time.
That's great. Let's bring Deirdre in. Deirdre, you are described as a mystical visionary. What is that? What do you do?
Well, a mystic is someone who has one foot grounded in this reality and another foot grounded in the greater reality. And the greater reality encompasses the messages from nature, from the spiritual source of nature, such as the trees and the rocks and the birds, and also the realms of the spirit world, the angels, prophets. And since I was 3 years old, I have had these experiences and lived with them and have had to kind of make peace with this and understand what is this. And so a mystic is someone who can see beyond the veil and reports it to others. That's the visionary part, to say, hey, this is what is out there, and I want to share this with you. I want to share this information and this knowledge. That's my gift, and that's what I'm here to do.
Good for
so
you.
That's what a mystic is.
Tell us this moment with your mother when you both were fighting her affliction of cancer.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure it was a difficult time, but somehow the two of you got together and you began to fight this in a very mystical, spiritual way, didn't you?
Yes, well, my mother and my father were both research scientists in biochemistry and physiology.
And she was a poet too, right?
And she was a poet. And she always had that poetic sense. But I grew up in this very scientific family. There was, you know, we didn't go to church. We did not follow a religion. My father left the Catholic Church and said that science was going to be, you know, the new God. So when my mother was diagnosed with terminal breast cancer and she had a radical mastectomy, and back in those days, there was no help. There was no City of Hope. There was no groups.
Right, right.
There was nothing. You were ostracized, and it was a shame, like you have to hide. And she went into this terrible depression, and she was given a year to live, and I was devastated. So I started praying over my mother, because I was like, well, I know people pray. I'm going to, whatever that is, I'm going to do it. I don't know what it is, but I'm going to do it. And I just remember connecting with this feeling of bliss and a feeling of just this yummy union bliss, and saying to God, please help my mother. And then one night, the room we were in, it was late at night in Memphis, Tennessee, and the room filled with light. And my mother said, who turned the lights on? And I said, well, I didn't turn them on. And I ran around and checked all the lamps, And I said, Mom, none of the lights are on. And she said, wow, I don't have any pain. And that was the beginning of our spiritual discovery that we turned into radiance healing. Which
did you learn a lot at this point?
I did learn a lot. For one thing, I learned that science was great, but it could not replace God, because that was the word in my house. And I confronted my dad with this, and this started a lifetime debate with my father, who, at the end of his life, many, many years, he turned to me and he said, you know, you were right.
How about that? Now, with the two of you, you being the mystic, William being the physicist, William, how do you two gel like that?
Well, you know, quite honestly, I've always had I've pretty much always had a longing for what Deirdre decides is having a foot in the other world. So, when I would study with teachers who really were mystics, and the idea that the visionary sense or the, you know, having psychic powers or siddhas or being able to know things at a distance and all that stuff, I was always fascinated with, and I really had a longing to experience it, but I sometimes feel like I'm kind of a stick in the mud and that sort of extraordinary stuff doesn't happen to me. So being around Deirdre, it's really quite wonderful, because she'll, you know, the joke we have is you never know who's going to show up at the dinner conversation. Yeah,
so
we'll be
true.
Saying, and I'll say something, and she gets that look, and she goes, and I'm like, oh God, what now, honey? She goes, don't shoot the messenger. I'm just going to tell you what they're telling me. And I just love that that connection to other worlds, or the way that Deirdre will connect with nature. And I've actually learned a lot from her, from being around her. And so for me now, what's starting to happen is I have magical things with nature where animals will just, you know, rabbits will just come up and bump my foot while I'm sitting there and then run off. You know, just crazy little stuff like that that I love. So it's...
Would that have happened before you got involved in these kinds of projects? Where rabbits would come up and do that to you? Or have they sensed something, a change with you?
I think they sense a change. I've had a lot of them. Right now I'm up at 8,300 feet in the Rocky Mountains. And, you know, they really sense, you know, animals really sense danger. They sense the vibrations. They just get it. And so as I've, you know, meditated and worked on refining myself, there's just an energy field where they don't feel afraid or anything. And they just, you know, they just start coming up, or I'll look up the house I live on. There's often nose prints on the windows where the deer and the elk will just come up, and they'll look in and they rub their noses on. I have to go clean off all the smear on the windows.
Are you in Colorado now?
I am, and Deirdre's in Santa Barbara.
Okay, how close are you to Boulder?
I'm right above Boulder.
Because we do our television shows there every month in our Beyond Belief TV shows. I got to get you in on one of the programs.
I'd like to, in
That'd
fact.
That'd be fun.
I have lunch tomorrow with Yurka.
Oh, well, tell him hi for us.
Yeah, I told him we were going to be on doing an interview with him. He goes, "Oh, George, oh, great, great, yeah." We do all this stuff together. So I'll
He's a genius, by the way, William.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
this guy has got the Midas touch.
Yep.
He really does. So bump into him. Let him. But, you know, you've got the Midas touch yourself. I mean, at this point, what the bleep has grossed how much now?
Oh, boy. It's probably $30 million.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
That's exciting. Yeah. What have you learned? I'm going to bring you both in on this. What have you two both learned about what's out there? What does these incredible things? What is it? Is it the God factor? Something is doing these things. William, what do you think it is?
Well, I would say it's the God factor. I would say that, I mean, in my understanding, there's just there's this world we're living in, this dimension, time and space and whatnot, and there's other dimensions and there's other realities. You know, people have near-death experiences and they report these other realms. You know, I listen to my beautiful wife and she tells me what it's like when she has these visions or these lucid dreams. And so there are just all these levels, and there's intelligence and life forms on those levels interacting with us to the ability that they can. So it's, you know, I've lately been thinking a lot, you know, always trying to understand, you know, what is it? Is it God? You know, what is God? And I've kind of keep thinking, you know, in the end, it's probably unfathomable to, on the one hand, understand the whole picture because we just can't encase it. But on the other hand, you can become one with the whole picture and then you don't care. So that's as far as I've gotten in this incarnation.
Deirdre, what do you think? What is all of this?
Well, to answer my beloved husband, I would say that when one is one with everything, one cares beyond anything you can imagine.
Mm-hmm.
You care even more, because you realize that you are everything and that everything simply needs love, more love to heal. It's all about love. So, you know, what happens? What propels the expansion of consciousness, such as what the bleep do we know, becoming so successful, which, you know, when I saw it, this is long before I met Will. Yeah, I saw the movie. I fell in love with him. I said, I have to meet that man because he really saved my life. I was like, oh, my gosh, someone gets it, and they're making a movie about it. I'm not alone out here. You know, what propels the movement now of what we're seeing in the world with yoga, meditation, mindfulness?
It's huge now, too.
It's huge. And what did it really, what I see is that our soul, we have our human soul, our soul, which is on a journey of awakening, is it on a journey of discovering, of uniting with this physical plane. Our soul is expanding. Our soul is finding itself, is longing to merge with consciousness. And we are consciousness. So this dance is expanding and expanding. And that's the glory. That's the beauty of today. Of course, we're seeing the pain of today. But when I look around, I see just this vast field, a meadow blooming with millions of phenomenal flowers of spiritual light and energy of souls, turning to look inward, turning to find themselves. And that's just the big mama. Yeah, that's the all it is, the great river of presence that is longing to express itself through us and this reality. So that's what I see.
It's a remarkable power, to be sure. And,
remarkable.
It's something. Well, I want to talk about the God factor when we come back in just a moment. And we're talking about, if you haven't seen the film yet, What the Bleep Do We Know, you're missing something. So it's still available, and you can still watch it. And it was created by William Arntz. He had some great helpers with him, Betsy Chase and Mark Vincente, as they produced and directed this. But he put it together. He bankrolled it and took a chance, and it became an international bestseller. It, I believe, is the language. It's in English, Spanish, and German. We're going to come back and talk more on Coast to Coast AM. Well, this month of October, it's our Cosmic Search Trivia Question, $500 weekly prize. And if you're eligible to participate every day, Monday through Friday, to get your name in the hat for that drawing for the winnings. And here is our trivia questions tonight. And, of course, full information at coasttocoastam.com. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. We are with Deirdre DeHade and William Arntz. William, of course, is the creator of the incredible film, What the Bleep Do We Know? And William, when you put this film together with your staff, what was the one thing you did find out that you didn't know before?
Oh, my. What was the one thing I found out that I didn't know before?
See, I tend to throw these curveball questions.
That's a great curveball question. I mean, I've done a lot of interviews, and that's the first time I think that's a curveball with a slider, I think. That's a combo plate. What did I learn? Well, there was thing I learned about, this was about filmmaking, not necessarily about the cosmos.
Mm-hmm.
One thing I learned was that at one point we'd hired an A-list editor to edit the film. And after about 3 months, the man said, this is as far as I can take it. I don't know, having all these elements together, I just don't know if I, and I got another job, so goodbye.
Oh, so he didn't get it, did he? He didn't understand.
No, he didn't. He kind of did, but it was a weird thing to try to meld all these different styles. And so,
was that Jonathan or was that somebody else?
Yes, that was Jonathan.
Okay.
And, at that point, I'm like, oh my God, what are we going to do? And Betsy just looked at me and says, well, dude, I guess you're on. And I had never made a film, edited a film before, or really made a film. So I started editing it and cutting it together. And what I learned was that when I was growing up, I listened to a lot of classical music. Mostly when people were listening to rock and roll, I was listening to classical music. And I realized that ability, that sensitivity that classical music has when you're dealing with long themes and bringing back motifs and whatnot. I used that in the editing of the film, which is why with so many disparate elements, the thing just works. So that was, and I didn't realize that till partway through it. I was like, oh, I see, I'm doing this like a symphony. Okay, now that I got that, it kind of makes sense.
You and Deirdre are involved in what is called a age of surprise. Tell us about that.
I'll tell it briefly, and then I'll turn it over to Deirdre.
Sure.
Deirdre was the one who really really saw the age of surprise. But it began with us putting together this book, the not so little book of surprises, and that book was, I took a bunch of teachings that Deirdre's been doing. There's transcripts, 10 years worth of transcripts of her teaching, and probably 20 years of her poetry. And I said, honey, I can just take these, and just like a film, I can take the quotes from the transcripts and associate pictures with it and give it an arc and put it together like you would put a movie together. And I called it the Not-So-Little Book of Surprises because her quotes and her poetry are surprising, because for someone who sees the other worlds, it's surprising. And as she says, the first time the doors open and you see another reality more real than this one, you'll be surprised. So I called it that thing, the Not-So-Little Book of Surprises, and put it together, and we put it out there. And then, at one point, take it from there, honey.
Okay, great.
All right, come on, Deirdre.
So Will came up with the name, the Not-So-Little Book of Surprises, and I was like, why are you calling it this? And he told me, and I was like, that's pretty awesome. So I, being, the daughter of scientists, I say, well, I've got to study this. I've got to go deeper into this. And then Will was really riffing on, what happens in a surprise, how the biochemistry of your body changes in surprise and what it does. And I said, I just got to riff on this. So I started meditating. I meditate every day for long periods of time. And in my meditations, I have some pretty extraordinary visuals, experiences of greater reality, or heaven, if you want to use that word. And as I was doing this study on surprise, I started to receive messages from the divine about surprise. And then one day, deep in my meditation, where I was really in the state of bliss, the state of union with all things, and in the great golden room with angels and a chalice, and I'm in this room, and then this voice, you know, the voice that I attribute to God, if you don't mind me saying, I know mm-hmm. that gets pretty like out there.
Well, I think a lot of people would like to know that.
Okay, good. So I attribute this voice to God after a lifetime of hearing this voice, who said, you are living in the age of surprise, and I've led you here to see this because you were meant to see it, to share with people this, and then share with them the tools and the keys so that everyone will be able to transform in this age and then not be too traumatized in this age. God really wants us to be informed about what the age of surprise is and why it's here and how we can work with God to get go through it transformed and also safe, and have some fun.
If somebody said to you, Deirdre, there is no God, what would you say to them?
I would say, well, first of all, tell me, what God are you talking about? Like, what's your belief of God?
Right.
That's what I would say, because many times when people say there's no God, the God that they say is a God I don't believe in either. I'm like, well, okay, you and I are on the same board. From my experience of having experiences of being one with all of creation and dissolving into infinite space, God is what I call the great river. It's a presence, an all-loving, caring presence that's so vast and so beyond what we can comprehend, God's understanding, that, and so loving. And you know, all that God wants is for us to be cared for, and that's why God created the angels and the nature spirits and the different emissaries, the deities, so that we would have energies that were close to us to help us. Where we get into trouble here is we all think we can do it on our own, Howard, and that's our ego, and that's where we get into trouble. Because if we could just go back to saying, okay, I need help, I'm going to pray, I'm going to call in an angel, I'm going to say, please help me, I'm going to get into a God forbid magical thinking and ask the divine to help, then that's when the miracles come in, because we don't ask and we don't believe that presence of God can't help us the way God wants to.
If you tap into it, mm-hmm. into this state where miracles occur and healings occur and things like that, there's almost no end to what you can do, is there?
There is no end to what you can do. There is there's a container in this reality that hinders the 1,000% of miracles that could happen, because if that could happen, our whole world would transform right now. So there's a container called the physical reality. However, this container has many doorways, many windows, and it's up to us, the humans here, to open the doors and the windows so that that love, that light, can do what it's here to do and pour the miracles in. But we have to open the doors. That's the key.
And let's bring William in for a second. William, we talk about quantum in physics. What does that mean?
Quantum, what was that?
that?
In physics. What does that mean, quantum?
Ah, quantum. Well, quantum...
Because we hear it. We hear it all the time.
You hear it all the time, all the time. And I'll give a little history of science here. It was Max Planck, who's considered the father of quantum physics. He came up with the word quantum. And quantum is, I guess it's from the Latin or the Greek, and it just it means a specific value. Like when you say 1, 2, 3, 4, those are specific values. Well, the weird thing about quantum is, in our world, you know, you can pick up an apple and you say, okay, you know, this apple's 1 pound, or, well, it's 1 1/4, or it's maybe 1 1/2, or something like that. But in the world of quantum, there's nothing between 1 and 2. So what blew their minds was when they figured out that for an atom, you know, we have the idea of the atom, there's the nucleus in the center, and then there's a band of electrons. We've all seen the picture, it looks like the solar system. Then another band of electrons. And each band of electron has a certain energy to it. So what happens is, let's say an electron goes from a high level to a low level of energy. When it does that, it emits a photon of energy, which is a photon is light. Well, the weird thing is, when the electron goes from, let's say, the energy state of 5 down to the energy state of 4, it never goes 5, you know, 4 3/4, 4 1/2, 4 1/4. At one instant, it's at 5, and the next instant, it's at 4. Not only that, it's even spookier in that it's at a one level, a distance from the nucleus, and the next instant, it's at a different level, it's closer to the nucleus, and the electron never goes in between. It would be like you going from L.A. to New York, and you never go in between. You
yeah.
never cross the Mississippi River. You just, you're in one instant, you're at one place, and one instant, you're at another. So when people say stuff like quantum transformation, for instance, the reason they like that analogy is because it's an instantaneous thing that can happen. You're at one point, you're sick, you have this problem, and the next instant, boom, you're well, and you never go in between. It's not like, oh, I'm feeling a little better now. It just, you flip states. And so that's where quantum is, and it says down at that subnuclear level, everything is in that state of quantum, and it's not at all like it is here where things are continuous. So that's kind of why people talk about quantum transformation, quantum change. For a while, quantum was the new buzzword. And we used to joke about this after the movie came out, because we talk a lot about quantum in the movie. There was quantum this and quantum that. And at one point, I was joking. I said, oh, there's going to be next, it's going to be a quantum cookbook. And I think Betsy said, they've come out with one. It sort of became a buzzword. But that's the brief of why it's quantum. And the thing is, it's so appealing to a lot of people because it's in some respects so magical. You know, how can an electron be here and somewhere else at the
right.
same time? And they've seen that. So it's a very different alien world for us.
It can't be accidental. So it had to have been conceived and thought out.
Well, the more I think about sort of everything, I keep coming to the idea that this universe, this world that we live in, came about by electrons and subatomic particles banging together is just ludicrous. When you think about DNA, I was sitting out on the front porch in the mountains this morning, and I saw this butterfly. And the butterfly was going flower to flower to flower. Somehow the butterfly knew what flowers to go to, knew how to fly and did all this stuff. And the butterfly's DNA is 90% the same as ours. And it's like...
That's pretty close.
I can't even fathom the intelligence that could put that together and have it work that way. It just blows my mind. So, you know, getting back to your question of God... To me, when I just look at the world around, I'm like, oh, come on, this didn't just happen with electrons banging together. No, I can't go there.
No, not either can I. I mean, it's truly something remarkable. Where do people still watch the film?
Well, it just recently we got on Amazon Prime.
Oh, you did? Boy, yeah. That's huge.
Yeah, that was nice. It's funny, Deirdre, who does see the future, about a month ago she said something about, well, you know, I think you got to remember Bleep's an evergreen film, and so, you know, it's going to be around some more again. And then about a week later, I got a call from my electronic distributor, said, oh, Amazon Prime is picking it up.
All right, when we come back in a moment, let's talk with both of you again about some of these amazing things you're both doing in the world of mysticism, spirituality, of course. And we will take phone calls in our final hour just ahead on Coast to Coast AM as we talk about what the bleep do we know.